Hey, welcome back to the Protectors Podcast. I'd like to welcome a very special guest, Clint Emerson. He is the author of A Right Kind of Crazy and 100 Deadly Skills, and he's definitely got 100 Deadly Skills. He's been around for decades protecting our nation here and abroad. How's it going, Clint?
Hey, how you doing? Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I know you've been on this media tour. You went to one of my friends, Chad, shows the other day and had a good time, it looks like.
Yeah, it was. I was there with Jack Carr, and it seems that we have the same publicist. And so I'm learning that my publicist just kind of contacts all the same people over and over again for all of us, because I seem to be shadowing or leading Jack Carr for about, you know, most of these interviews, which is all good. You know, it's a good little run. But yeah, Chad's show, he's a funny dude.
Yeah, Chad's great. And I had Jack on a few weeks ago, and I think your publicist linked us up or something. I can't even remember how this network is going between all the different shows. Everybody kind of knows each other in this network. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's good for everyone, you know.
Now, Clint, everybody, you know, you've been around for a while. A lot of people know your story, but they know that you're a tactician. You know you're the real deal. Everything that has to do with protection overseas, abroad, it could be anywhere. But now your new book is, it's kind of touching on who you really are, kind of like the back story of where did you get this knowledge base from? Can you tell me why you decided to do this now after 20-something years?
Well, first, I never planned on writing books when I got out. And it's always a joke that SEALs, you know, sign the book contract before they get their trident. But it's just a joke. It's not real. I ended up getting 100 Deadly Skills rolling because of a friend that was like, hey, you want to write a book with me? And I was like, sure. And what I figured out is he kind of just wanted to leverage the Navy SEAL thing. Cause you know, he was the one that was like, hey, you put SEAL on something and it sells. And I'm like, okay. So, and then it became my baby because he ended up getting injured, and then I was left taking it to the finish line, and yeah, it ended up being a great book, and then we ended up signing 100 Deadly Skills Survival Edition, and it did great. And then it's only natural that a publisher goes, hey, so you want to do a memoir? And I was like, God, I've been trying to stay away from it. And but they convinced me because, hey, you know, based on their analytics and comments and this and that, they want to hear your stories that led to 100 Deadly Skills. So this memoir is different than the rest. It's it doesn't focus solely on operations. It focuses on all of the nuances, craziness, and all of the dark, twisted stuff that goes on with you and your guys in the middle of the operation. So, which makes it funny, makes it twisted, and makes it definitely a turn page. Everybody who's read it so far, they go from cover to cover in one stop. And I don't know. We'll see what you think. But it's so far so good.
I picked it up. I just got it. Thanks to your publisher. And I pick it up right off the bat, and I see you had a spot about your brother, not only corralling your teammates, but then you also have like the family issues going on at the same time.
Yeah, no, it highlights that, you know, we all, I think, you know, there's a certain kind of myth that comes with the SEAL world, and I'm trying to humanize that through this book. It's got a lot of paralleling themes. You know, one is more of an underdog theme because I was a nobody in a nobody high school doing nobody stuff, but did have passion and wanted to be a SEAL. And it kind of talks about that, but it also talks about even when you're at the tip of the spear, and you're overseas and you're, you know, doing, you know, bad things to bad people, then you still have your personal life going on and you still have all these other obstacles and dilemmas. And we tend to think, you know, oh, SEAL, he's just cruising the planet, kicking ass, and no issues, kind of living this rock star lifestyle without all the money, but certainly getting to have all the fun. But the reality is we're dealing with, you know, not just that, the stress of the professional side and putting yourself in these high risk situations, but you're also got all this crap going on at home that you've got to deal with literally simultaneously. So yeah, I definitely point out some pretty interesting stories.
Yeah. And you definitely cannot compartmentalize it as much as people think you'd like to, and that you can. There's a lot of stress that goes with, hey, you know what? I can't pay the bills. What if this? What if that? And then you throw in a family crisis. And then what if your teammates are having problems and you got to deal with their problems? It's just a big circle, man.
It is. Yeah. And it's, and I tried to, you know, a little tongue in cheek and a whole lot of humor and some twisted stuff too along the way with all of these stories that kind of highlights that, hey, you know, what makes us great overseas doesn't necessarily make us all that great at handling the things that we got to deal with, you know, in our families or personal lives.
Yeah. And, you know, I've noticed in the law enforcement world, military world, and now, you know, as I'm getting more into the emergency responder world, is that the busting balls is out there.
Right. You're still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. You know, this is the thing about a professional podcast is you got the coonhound in the background. And you know what? I'm going to leave that in there. I want people to know that, you know, you got to deal with life's work. But yeah, I was just saying, like, everybody is just busting balls, like, all the time. It's kind of like the humors. It's good. It's a good stress relief.
It is. Yeah. I think when you're hanging with the guys and there's nothing going on, we used to joke, you know, team guys, if they're just sitting around with nothing, if you don't give them anything to do, then they'll just get in trouble. Or they'll throw rocks at stuff. They'll hit things with sticks. You know, they do your typical barbaric caveman shit if you're, you know, if you leave them alone too long. But I definitely tell, and if you've gone that far in the book, you know, I tell all kinds of some pretty sick stories of what goes on when the boys get bored.
Yeah, but that's good. And I like the fact, because, you know, I swear, I've read a lot of the SEAL books. You know, back in the 90s, the only thing we had was, you had Marcinko's books, and you had, for the Army guys like me, you had the LERP books. So yeah. When you start, like, now there's a lot of SEAL books out there, and I read them, and, it, you know, you can only listen and see the Buds and Hell Week things a few times where you kind of get the idea what it's about. Yeah. But you want to see the human behind the Trident.
Right. And that was definitely the goal with this one is, and I clearly say it in there, like, hey, if you want to learn more about Buds, go read the other books. And I just make the point that it's not about how many push-ups you can do or how many pull-ups you can do. It's about vetting and screening and making sure you get a guy who doesn't, you know, shit his pants in the corner when the shots are fired. And that's really the number one objective of Buds. And I kind of go through it. And then I go through my story there, you know, and, you know, a little bit of trouble I got into and some stupid things that I managed to get away with that I would have never put a Trident on if I would have got caught. But I kind of cover that stuff, too. But I don't get into, you know, OK, phase one, we did this.
Yeah.
And it was Hell Week. And phase two was pull comp and we did this. And I mean, everybody. Yeah, there's Discovery Channel shows all about it.
Well, you know, the cool thing, too, is you transition over. Now, you went to NSA next, or was that part of the agency, or was it like a task force? Or
no, I was active duty assigned, and it was something cool. New, and I was one of very few guys that got to do it. They don't do it anymore. And so it put me in a very tech-oriented world, and I was kind of geeky to begin with. I liked that stuff, but you go to that place and holy crap, man. I mean, it's just, that is, you know, America's very unknown weapon against the globe is really the NSA. It's a cool place.
It is. Absolutely. Now you transition out of the service and then you start your own business. Is that what happened next?
Yeah. While I was in, I actually, you know, I had racked up so much leave that, heck, like the last year of my 20 years, I didn't have to really go to work. So I worked on me, and a lot of guys don't take that opportunity, but I had heard from, older guys, like, do it. Do not just work yourself all the way to the day you retire, because it's so addictive that a lot of guys end up doing that. But I came to a full stop and then just solely worked on Escape the Wolf. And it started as a little handbook for travel security. And it got passed around while I was at the NSA. Well, I took that little book and passed it around some other people, ended up in the hands of an FBI guy that was a retired FBI guy that was head of security for the Wall Street Journal. His name is Joe Cantamessa. Great dude. He hits me up out of the blue. I don't even know how he got my contact information. He's like, hey, can you take this book, Escape the Wolf, and turn it into a course for all 800 of my elite journalists spread out all over the world? Wow. And I was like, I'm in the Navy. I don't know if I can pull that off. And so he was like, all right, that's fine. Figure it out and call me when you've got it done. And I was like, all right. So I took a leap of faith. I went to a developer and we turned it into an e-learning course. And that was $60,000 to develop this thing. Right. And that was like on credit cards. And then I went back to the Wall Street Journal, said, hey, so I got it done. And he's like, okay, I'll buy it. And then that turned the book into, you know, a real company. And then since then, I've been doing crisis management, policy, workforce education, and tools, you know, for a lot of Fortune 500s and a lot of, like, you know, mid-cap companies, small companies, nonprofits, places of worship, and a lot of private schools up in the Northeast there. So now we're doing all kinds of stuff for, you know, doesn't matter if you're big, if you're small, we have solutions that cover a large swath of everything from active shooter to cyber threat awareness. And then in the middle, you've got, of course, natural disaster, medical events, and safe travel abroad, which is what I started with. But, you know, now it's become the smaller piece of what I do because of all the active shootings and cyber threats.
Busy, 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 I'm sure. Now, how many people are you employing now?
We run light. You know, I 1099 a lot of folks. I probably have six employees, but I rely heavily on 1099s because they stay current. You know the deal. The minute you go work for someone is that very minute your experience starts going into the negatives. So you want guys that are out kind of roaming around doing a lot of different stuff. And what that does is bring in, you know, depending on what I'm doing, fresh material. And when I say guys, it's guys, gals, you know, and in that category of people, it's not just law enforcement and military. It's, I mean, I even 1099 certain kinds of attorneys, depending on the client's needs. So that's really, it's really a fun. It has its boring spots for sure, especially when you talk about OSHA compliant policies and best practices. But anyway, there's not too many people doing what we do. And so it gives us a lot of clientele to choose from.
Yeah, I'm learning you have to stay relevant, especially in the law enforcement world, because it's different now. It's not as easy as it used to be. When I used to work dope, you know, back then we had flip phones and beepers. And now everybody's got GPSs. They could chat through Xboxes. They could do anything they want to get the product across the border. So if you don't have people that are relevant, you know, you're going to be out of the game, especially in a business model.
Oh, yeah, you're exactly right. And if you're smart, you don't let yourself just get stuck into one little vertical, right? You want to navigate and move around through all of them in order to stay smart, stay up on your skills. And the big thing is always learning something new, because that's ultimately what ends up applying, you know, especially in the consultant world. You got to, like, stay ahead of the power curve.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, for the longest time, and personal for me is, like, I've been kind of pigeonholed as, like, the border expert, the ICE expert, and now I'm kind of transitioning it into, like, the liaison law enforcement and, you know, kind of getting all this other aspects in there, because you can't just get pigeonholed into one or two areas when you got a big world out there.
No, I totally agree. Oh, and don't forget, you're also an audio expert now, too.
Yeah, and a dog handler as well, with the coonhound running around here. Got to get Mike Ritland back on to help me how to train my dogs.
That's good people, man. He just moved into the shop next to mine. I talked him into moving a little closer.
Yeah, he was. I was wondering because we were talking about. I had him on the show, and I always hit him up. Excellent. He is an absolute pro when it comes to podcasting. Yeah, that's one of the best shows I've been on. He gave me an Oprah moment, and he had me crying in his studio practically. But I'm glad he's near Dallas now because he's just driving 2 hours out to his ranch. It's a nice ride, but it's kind of hard.
Yeah, it's a little too much. So now he's much closer. You know, it's 30, 40 minutes from the airport, vice 2 hours.
Now, I typically don't get political, and this really isn't a political question, but I'm writing up an article now for Law Enforcement Today about the ambush of the family down in Mexico, the Americans. Right. Now, when I first deployed back in 05, 06, you know, that's when Mexico, I'm not sure if this is out of your wheelhouse, but I'm pretty sure you understand what I'm talking about. You know, Calderon came into Mexico and took over as their president. And then the tactics of the cartel changed to kind of like a, you know, hey, we're going to cut off heads. We're going to hang people from the rafters. And we're going to kind of show that if you mess with us or if you go against us, we're going to kill you, rape, torture, and everything, your family. And then when I was in Iraq, I started seeing, as the anti-terror dude, I started seeing that, you know, Al-Qaeda and, you know, the militias were doing the same type of thing. Do you think that the, like, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and everything adapted the cartel tactics?
I think, so if you go back in history,
yeah,
who's been doing that kind of stuff the longest? It's certainly in the world of Islam. It's the Middle East. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking to a guy who grew up in Saudi Arabia. So
yeah.
Even as a kid, you know, it wasn't uncommon to see, you know, people walking around with only one hand because they had, you know, whatever, stolen a piece of bubble gum at the souk. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. Chopping hands off, chopping heads off. Saudi still does it to this day. You know, I think it's part of a much older, barbaric means of intimidation. It keeps society in check. Old school monarchy has been doing it for a very long time. So, you know, the fact the cartel's tactics changed, I think partial, you know, and I don't know for sure, but, you know, it would suggest that when you start doing stuff like that and increase that intimidation, then it's not only intimidating your borders, but it's also intimidating, you know, we know that there's feuds between different mm-hmm. cartels, and it's one that's trying to outdo the other on a regular basis. And so as soon as one makes, and this is just characteristic of people with testosterone, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like if someone does something, well, then I'm going to one up them, and then they're going to one up me, and then I'm going to one up you. Before you know it, you're chopping heads off and doing stupid stuff.
It's the machismo aspect of it too. It's different, a different culture down in Mexico and South America about the machismo. And, yeah, you're absolutely right, man.
Yeah, it's I think, you know, it works. It makes, but it doesn't help, you know, like when you look at anybody's economy south of us, it relies heavily on tourism, and, you know, mm-hmm. and you got these guys really making a mess of things. And it's not just Mexico, you know, got Venezuela is a mess. You've got all those bordering countries of both that are starting to feel it and get crippled by it. And, you know, it's too bad, really, because it's beautiful down there.
Yeah, I love Mexico. Well, I used to love Mexico. I wouldn't, you know, I couldn't dare yeah. not with my book coming out and everything else. But yeah, I'm not going to be going down south of the border for a while.
Not a good idea.
but have you seen an uptick in your business model to deal with Central and South America?
Yeah, it's definitely become more common my probably not even secondary, but tertiary type offerings is like more of the PSD flavor, you know, guys mm-hmm. with guns going and protecting, more of an executive service piece. And that is definitely, you know, now I'm getting more and more about, hey, we've got a couple of folks going to Mexico for this, or we've got some, you know, there's a gas oil company building some stuff down in Colombia. They're all now ramping up that security piece. And then along with that, doing a lot of threat and vulnerability assessments too, where we work hand in hand with the embassies, go out on town, making sure that these U.S. companies that are going to be building stuff, it doesn't matter if it's down south or South Africa, we make sure that, all right, when they're buying the property, when they start building, that, you know, they're not being scammed and being told, no, it's a great neighborhood, when the reality is there's gunfire every night. You know what I mean? So we do a lot of vetting for stuff down there for sure, in a variety of ways.
Yeah, there's so much more to the security world than just guys with guns. And it seems like you got it straight on. Well, I've got you on for 20 something minutes now. I'm not going to keep you on longer. I know you are going crazy with this book tour and you've got the business and everything, but I really appreciate you coming on.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me, man. It's been a good talk and a pleasure.
Yeah, we could. I'd love to talk to you sometime about border security and all the other stuff, because I do have to keep that in my wheelhouse. But one thing I do have to ask you, do you have any charities or anything you want to throw a shout out to?
Yeah, I tend to always highlight the Glenn Doherty Memorial Foundation. That's GDMF. Glenn was a good buddy. His sister's doing a great job with the foundation. Every dollar goes out the door towards educating and allowing everything from special operators to even law enforcement guys to roll into their next gig in life. The Glenn Doherty Memorial Foundation, good to go.
Okay, I'm going to write that down, and then I'm going to try to get them on a show, because I love promoting out charities and everything, because that's kind of my, this is one of those not-for-profit, free, kind of doing it on my time, podcast. Yeah. So I definitely do that. Also, this is going to show, I'm going to push this out this weekend as Veterans Day weekend. Any special shout outs or anything you're doing this weekend that you want anybody to know about?
Well, we got the launch of the book on, I believe, Monday, Tuesday, the day of Veterans Day or the day after Veterans Day. So that's the right kind of crazy out there. I think for any information about what I have going on here in the near future, it's all at clintemerson.com. It's probably the best way to keep stuff organized. If anyone's interested, I'll be doing base signings at Fort Hood and Fort Sam Houston, along with a select number of 5-Eleven stores. I'll be doing signings as well for anyone who's interested.
Okay, cool. And when you come out to DC, I'll be glad to meet up with you and buy a beer, a cup of coffee, or anything you'd like.
No, and hey, that's another plug. I mean, the International Spy Museum,
yes,
opened up a new one there in DC. Everyone should check it out. It's a nonprofit. The way it stays alive and archives and keeps the world of espionage and the history of espionage alive is through that museum, and you've got to check it out. And I will be also out there at some point, I think in December, doing a book signing and hanging out there. So it'll be a presentation plus a book signing, I think. So stay tuned for that too.
Yeah. And the Spy Museum also has a really good podcast, and
they do.
Yeah.
And he does a good job.
Yeah. And definitely check out the Spy Museum. It's incredible. That's one great thing about living near and in DC area, is I get to check out all the good sites.
Yeah. Beautiful place.